From KMXD in Kodiak, this is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Maggie Wall. The Food and Drug Administration drops the last hurdle to genetically modified salmon being produced in the United States. And at least one company is poised to ship engineered salmon eggs to a fish farm in Indiana. Researchers believe winds from the south could lead to the disappearance of a cold pool in the Bering Sea. That pool of cold water is the nursery for Alaska's massive and lucrative pollock fishery. And we go back to the day when sailing ships plied Alaska waters. We have a report on the discovery of a sunken three-masted ice ship off Kodiak. The trick to finding it? Realizing the difference in names for places between then and now. All that coming up on this week's edition of the Alaska Fisheries Report, right after this.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard accepted hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families. AMSEA at amsea.org or 907-747-3287.
Genetically engineered salmon is on its way to the United States. Food and Drug Commissioner Scott Gottlieb announced last week that he is canceling an import alert, which was the last barrier keeping the fish out of the country. The manufacturer of Aqua Advantage Salmon can now transport engineered salmon eggs to the company's facility in Indiana, where it's to be grown into full-sized salmon. It is the first animal with intentionally altered genes allowed to be sold for human consumption. The FDA concluded in 2015 that the fish is safe to eat. Aqua Advantage salmon is designed to grow about twice as fast as regular farm salmon. It splices genes from Atlantic salmon, Pacific Chinook, and an eel-like fish called an ocean pout. In Alaska, where wild salmon is a top export, the engineered product has been viewed as a threat to both the environment and commerce. Senator Lisa Murkowski calls it Frankenfish. She says the FDA's decision is short-sighted and wrong-headed. She says she'll ramp up efforts to pass a more stringent labeling law. But at the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, Interim Director Jeremy Woodrow is not panicking.
You know, honestly, here at ASME, we see that as just another farmed seafood product, and we've been competing against farmed salmon in the marketplace for several decades now.
Farm salmon is generally cheaper, but ASME has pressed Alaska Salmon as a quality brand, emphasizing that it is never farmed.
Wild, natural, sustainable, those are attributes that really only apply to Alaska salmon and wild harvested salmon, and that sets us apart in the marketplace. And those are the attributes that we'll continue to sell to customers.
The U.S. Department of Agriculture approved rules in December that require the Aqua Advantage fish to be labeled as bioengineered, but not necessarily in words written on the packaging. The requirement could be met with a QR code on the label that the consumer would scan with a smartphone, which would lead to a web page that contains the information.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs, 1-800-992-4960, or online at alaskaboat.com.
Climate change has prompted many Alaskans to wonder what will our oceans and bays and our coastal regions look like in the years to come. For those wondering what the Bering Sea will look like decades from now, last year was a glimpse of the future. It brought something many did not expect, the disappearance of the undersea cold pool, which is the nursery for Alaska's pollock fishery. Johanna Urich with KYUK in Bethel looks at how it happened.
When it was discovered by oceanographers, the giant cold pool of water at the bottom of the Bering Sea shelf of Alaska was seen as a huge wall that would keep the sea cold, even as the rest of the North Pacific Ocean warmed up. The expectations were that it would remain a refuge for the region's lucrative pollock fishery. The strongest advocate of that idea was Phyllis Stabenow, a physical oceanographer with the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, or NOAA. Then the coal pool began to fluctuate. 2 years ago, Stabenow changed her mind and predicted it would disappear. The coal pool did get smaller, but no one expected it to disappear quickly. But then the south wind arrived.
As our colleague Nick Bond likes to say, wind rules.
Tom Van Pelt is a scientist with the Joint Institute for the Study of the Atmosphere and Ocean at Washington University. He presented an analysis of the coal pool to the Alaska Marine Science Symposium for Phyllis Stabenow and her colleagues at NOAA because they were prevented from attending by the government shutdown. 2017 was a warm summer. The press was talking about a warm blob of water headed north, leaving a trail of dead seabirds. Fall arrives, a time when the wind normally blows out of the north. That fall, it came out of the south and stayed, pushing warm water northwards and keeping the ice from coming down and forming. Van Pelt says the wind kept blowing from the south into winter, its warm temperatures keeping ice from growing till deep into the season when the winds finally shifted.
Ice is beginning to form, but behind schedule and reduced. Winds out of the northeast, well, they were probably more typical, but air temperatures are much, much warmer than average, even above freezing at times, and this is in the depths of winter.
The winter of 2017-18 was the least ice the region has seen in historic memory. And it wasn't there very long, because the south wind came again early last spring, diminishing the ice and pushing what's left of it into the north.
Stepping into February and March, ice is already retreating in February. Winds continue to be out of the south. Air temperature continues to be warmer than average.
Van Pelt says the south wind also did something else. It pushed enough warm water into the region to mix with the formerly colder and saltier water at the bottom, making it less salty. Scientists noticed it last spring.
After April, bottom temperatures, as I said, begin to warm in parallel with solar warming. That's something you usually only see in the surface layer, and they just kept increasing, even getting past that 2-degree threshold, what we think of as the cold pool. So why is that? Well, we think salinity's got a lot to do with it.
The result last summer, a tiny micro cold pool, and the pollock further north looking for colder water. This fall and winter, the north wind returned, and so did the ice. Most scientists expect the cold pool, along with the pollock, to be back on the Bering Shelf this summer. But the future will be more like last summer, with the south wind ruling.
There's prediction that winds out of the south will increase over this century. So winters like what we experienced in the region last year are predicted to be more common.
Modelers say it'll take around 40 years to shift to that new normal. But they've been wrong before. The Arctic is warming up faster than anyone predicted. I'm Johanna Urich.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans, on the web at alaskaseafood.org.
Alaska has a storied history of sailing ships. From the earliest explorers to Russian trade ships, from commercial cargo transport to fishing vessels powered by sail. This is the story of a 3-masted ship that was transporting ice from Kodiak Island to San Francisco when it went down. In a book published in 2018, author, diver, and former Kodiak crab biologist Brad Stevens tells the tale of the research and discovery of the Kadiak. The secret to Stevens' success in finding the long-lost ship? Well, one, determination and hard work, and an understanding of the difference in charts from the 1800s to now, in particular, how the names of locations have changed through the years. Back in the 1800s, Kodiak had a booming industry exporting ice to San Francisco. Ships would sail north to Kodiak, load up with ice that was cut from local lakes and ponds, and then return to the much warmer waters of San Francisco Bay, all to bring ice to Californians before modern refrigeration. One of those ice ships was the three-masted Russian wooden bark named the Kadyak, which sank off Spruce Island in the 1860s. Its sinking has an interesting story that sounds like something out of the paranormal. The story that's passed down through the years has it that the ship's skipper was supposed to hold a service for Russian Orthodox Saint Father Herman, who was buried on Spruce Island. The skipper failed to do that, and his ship ended up hitting a rock off Kodiak. And because it was full of ice, which floats really well, it drifted for days until it sank right offshore from Father Herman's grave. The story fascinated Kodiak biologist and diver turned author Brad Stevens.
There's a real interesting story there, and when I first heard it, I thought, well, that sounds very nice and mythological, but it can't possibly be true. But it intrigued me.
Intrigue eventually led to Stevens finding the Kadyak and learning that, yes, it did sink right off of St. Herman's burial site. He shares the story in his book titled The Ship, the Saint, and the Sailor, The Long Search for the Legendary Kadyak. The key to finding the long-lost ship was a map, but not just any map. Stevens had already hunted up and studied plenty of maps of the area. Location names and other information left by the skipper of the ill-fated ship didn't match up until renowned Kodiak researcher Lydia Black showed Stevens what he calls a Rosetta Stone that was vital to interpreting the skipper's notes.
Names that we currently use were not always used in those locations, particularly Miller Point and Spruce Cape. He located them at one place, but we know them as a different place. So that was really the Rosetta Stone that allowed me to interpret his bearings and helped us figure out where the ship was.
That helped him clarify that the body of water that was called Icon Bay back when the ship sank is now known as Monk's Lagoon. Finding the Kadyak was only the beginning. As often is the case with sunken ships, next came a long period of determining who owned the vessel. That greatly delayed researching the ship.
It was ugly and it was not fun, but the state finally prevailed and is the real owner of the wreck site. And that allowed us to bring in an archaeology team and do a complete archaeological survey of it in 2004, which was the first underwater archaeological survey done in Alaska.
Stevens' book, The Ship, the Saint, and the Sailor, The Long Search for the Legendary Kadyak, is available through bookstores or online.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report is provided by the Stosh and Claudia Anderson Fund, supporting conservation and harvesting of Alaska's wild, sustainable fisheries.
That's it for this week's edition of the Alaska Fisheries Report. We had help from Liz Ruska, the Washington, D.C. correspondent with Alaska Public Media, and Johanna Urich with KYUK in Bethel. From KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Maggie Waugh.